Well, thank you, everyone. I wanted to talk a little bit about Lutheran International Disaster Response and the ILC. And I was actually, even when I was talking with Ross Johnson, I was hoping that on one level this might be more practical and even towards a discussion than a total pure presentation, although I do have a few things to say. And I wanted to begin by talking a little bit about how the LWF emerged. And it's sort of interesting that it was formed after in 1947, after World War II. But in one sense, it was actually formed for a disaster response or to help rebuild after the war. And there's all sorts of theories about various governmental action. But the bottom line is the LWF spent between $10 and $40 million in the wars in the period right after World War II, which they got from various governments. So the LWF, from its very inception, was at least in part a disaster relief organization from its get-go, or at least a social development. So it was designed to coordinate the relief efforts among the various Lutheran churches. So, of course, in the Missouri Synod, after Germany had been devastated or destroyed by World War II, a number of the Missouri Synod people wanted to assist, as well as the other American Lutherans. Missouri Synod managed to stay out of the LWF. We were concerned with unionism and syncretism. And at that time, the Missouri Synod was really just beginning the discussion of cooperation and externals. Because prior to that, the Missouri Synod really did not engage in activities with Lutheran churches that it was not in fellowship with. So this prompted that discussion, and the Missouri Synod at the time was part of the Synodical Conference, which was formed in 1874. And the Synodical Conference was a true fellowship. The churches were an altar and pulpit fellowship, and they agreed to do a bunch of things together. The primary focus of the Synodical Conference was to do international missions. And so the Synodical Conference, with the bodies in America that eventually became Missouri Synod, Wisconsin Synod, and the Evangelical Lutheran Synod, all agreed that this is how they would do international mission. The other members of the Synodical Conference were very concerned when the LWF began. And when Missouri Synod under President Banken began to discuss the concept of cooperation externals, the Wisconsin Synod said, this is going to be the Pandora's box through which all sorts of things enter into the Missouri Synod. And on one level, they were right. On the other hand, the Wisconsin Synod took a position where we're not going to do any of this stuff, and it limited the sorts of activities and responses they would do. There's probably a mediating position between where the Missouri Synod went and the events that led to Seminex and the position the Wisconsin Synod took. So that's another historical question we could talk about. But the LWF now has three purposes, basically to do doctrinal, social, and fellowship issues of their member churches. They also now consider themselves to be a communion. So the LWF would say that all of the member churches are in altar and pulpit fellowship with one another, and they can all commune with one another. Not every LWF church, however, agrees with that assertion of the LWF. So there are member churches of the LWF. We may be members of the LWF, but we're not in altar and pulpit fellowship with every other church inside the LWF. But this is a point of contention. The LWF has 144 member churches. They're in 79 countries. 79 countries seems to represent about the total number of countries where Lutheran churches exist. This has an interesting mission strategy, at least, or mission strategy implications, at least for the Missouri Synod. Where are you going to go and do mission work? Well, if it's in one of the 79 countries that has a Lutheran church, the Missouri Synod has to ask the question, can we work with that church body in that country in some way, or do we need to start a new church? For instance, in Madagascar, where Bishop David is from, it would be incredibly foolish for the Missouri Synod to go to Madagascar, where they have 4 to 5 million members in their church body, and say, we're going to go do mission work and start a new church. That would be pretty stupid. There may be places, like in the Congo or someplace, where there's an existing Lutheran church that is not, that the Missouri Synod or maybe other ILC members would not be able to work with, where we would say, yeah, we could start a church because it's relatively small and it's a big country. If I don't know the exact number of countries in the world, what, 150, 160, whatever it is right now, if you were to figure out where are the other countries where there are no Lutherans, most of them are going to be Muslim and towards Muslim extremists and not places that are terribly easy to get in to do mission work. So if you're going to try to get to those countries where there's not an existing Lutheran church, it has to be a pretty unique and creative way. No white American's going to go to Saudi Arabia and start a church. It just isn't going to happen. But maybe Makani Jesus could send a pastor as a house servant to a Saudi, and that has happened. So the number 79 countries is significant. Three areas of work: theology, ecumenical, and interfaith relations, holistic mission, which that's an interesting concept, and then service. So they began on a service premise, and they've added these other two. They claim to have 72 million members. Now, this number, it's an interesting number. I would not agree with the number 72 million. For instance, they count the Church of Sweden, which claims to have about 6.5 million members. However, if you actually went to the Church of Sweden on Sunday morning to one of their churches, you might find 10, 15, 20 people in church. So they count every person that's been baptized by the Church of Sweden, and for up until the last few years, nearly every baby born was baptized in the Church of Sweden, even if they never went to church except when they were buried in a funeral. So when you factor out things like that, you could probably knock out at least a good 20 or 30 million people or more out of their LWF numbers. If you actually talked about people who regularly attended church, I'd say even if you talked about people who went to church more than once a year, or even once a year, you would knock down 72 million quite a lot. They also include churches that are not Lutheran. So the Hakka Bepe in Indonesia, by definition, is a union church. So they claim to hold to the Luther Small Catechism, and they claim to hold to the Heidelberg Catechism. So if you were to, let's say, eliminate Hakka Bepe from the 72 million, you knock out another 5 million as churches that do not profess to be distinctly Lutheran. I mentioned earlier, they consider themselves a communion of churches, and their current number one issue, and this is right off their webpage, is family, marriage, and sexuality, which is being entirely driven by the Northern European churches and by North America. And in 2009, the Church of Sweden and the ELCA decided that pastors could be homosexuals, practicing homosexuals, and they also decided that they would bless same-sex marriages. In 2012, the LWF said, this is not a communion-dividing situation. And in 2013, or by 2013, three LWF churches broke fellowship. And today, the message from the LWF is dealing with differences and journeying together. What the LWF values above all else is unity, but not unity based on a common confession or doctrinal agreement. And on the one hand, if you consider how they began, what was the original purpose of the organization? It was to coordinate the various efforts of different Lutheran churches to help reconstruct churches and other things in Europe after World War II. So they were trying to cast the broadest net in 1947 to get the most number of people to cooperate towards a goal of rebuilding Europe. Doctrinal distinction and unity was not the first priority. Now, if we compare this to the International Lutheran Council, the International Lutheran Council technically wasn't formed until 1993, but it has its origins back to 1952. So it began, or the seeds of the ILC began, within 5 years of the LWF. Now, no doubt this was in part because the Missouri Synod and some of her partner churches said, we can't be part of the LWF, but we need to do something. And so that plays into the origins of the ILC. The ILC's foundation was on doctrinal and confessional basis, not on a disaster or relief model. So the ILC did not form to say, how can we help churches in Europe rebuild? They formed on the basis of a confession. So right there you have a distinction in how the two organizations started. Here is the ILC's confessional basis. The ILC is a worldwide association of established confessional Lutheran church bodies which proclaim the gospel of Jesus Christ on the basis of an unconditional commitment to the Holy Scriptures as the inspired and infallible Word of God, and to the Lutheran confessions contained in the Book of Concord as the true and faithful exposition of the Word of God. So the basis of the ILC is on confession and on the principle that the Scriptures are inerrant and the inspired Word of God, which again is different and distinct from how the LWF operates. Right now in the LWF churches, they are placing a big emphasis on the topic of hermeneutics. And one of the reasons for the discussion of hermeneutics, they have something called transformative hermeneutics. And the idea of that is, how can we journey together when we have different understandings of the Bible? So when the Church of Sweden says, we don't accept that the Bible is the inspired Word of God, the Church of Sweden says, we think that it means something different. And then there's a church in Africa, let's say in Ethiopia or Madagascar, Tanzania, that says, we believe the Bible. How do we reconcile those two differences? And so the LWF is spending a lot of time focusing on transformative hermeneutics, so that they can bridge this gap and their fellowship or their organization can continue to stay together. So essentially what it does is it looks at a Bible passage, and the Northern European or North American says, we think when Jesus says this, it means that we should all get along in society and love one another. And then if an African says, no, we think that what Jesus said, his words really mean exactly what they said, the transformative hermeneutic is to say, what's the common truth of both of these statements? And when we agree on the common truth, you can think that Jesus said or meant what he said, and you, Northern European, can think Jesus didn't really mean what he said, but you agree that Jesus is love. And so that's the basis of our getting together. And so they're spending a lot of time going around holding these sorts of seminars in Africa and other places, trying to help people properly understand the Bible, or at least be able to get along with Northern Europeans and North Americans. The objectives of the ILC exist for the purpose of encouraging, strengthening, and promoting confessional Lutheran theology and practice centered in Jesus Christ, both among member churches and throughout the world, by providing opportunities for the joint study of contemporary theological issues, by giving mutual support and encouragement to the heads of member church bodies, by encouraging and assisting member churches in planning for mission outreach, by strengthening theological education through the conferences of theologians and seminary teachers, mission staff, and those involved with human care, by facilitating communication between confessional Lutheran churches of the world, and by stimulating facilitating the preparation and publication of confessional Lutheran literature. I think that these objectives are all good. I'm not really sure if you could improve them much. I'm sure there's ways of improving them, but they're basically very good. I think the ILC as an organization, if it were to honestly assess itself on each of these points, would have to say, well, we've done some of these things better and some of these things not so well. And that would probably be an observation or a complaint from some churches in the LWF that are interested in the ILC but haven't joined yet. So the ILC has done a very good job holding conferences, bringing people together. It's provided a forum of support by gathering people at least every few years. But there's more that could be done. I don't know how much the ILC in and of itself has really helped churches doing planning for mission outreach. It's a noble goal and something we should achieve or try to achieve, but I don't think that's really been a high focus. It's certainly trying to do some theological education. Up until recently, it certainly did not do any human care, even though it does list it as an objective. It sends out periodic communications, and it at least a couple things have been published. So these are all good goals that could be improved upon, but you notice their goals are different than the goals we saw for the LWF. So the two organizations have different purposes. Here's some information on the ILC, and it's very meager in comparison to the LWF. Certainly budgetarily it's very meager. With LWF has about a $70 to $100 million a year budget, and ILC is nowhere near that. But it has 36 churches in 35 countries, so it's about in half, a little less than half the number of countries as the LWF. Maybe I'm being a little generous, but 3 to 4 million members total, depending how you count. Historically focused on conferences, but lately it's been more involved in ecumenical discussions, even discussions with the Roman Catholic Church. Which that was an interesting beginning, at least, to hear the Roman Catholic Cardinal say that Rome should not deny a dialogue or a conversation with the Lutherans who actually believe the Book of Concord. That's a rather telling statement from Rome. And then discussions with various LWF member churches. So in this sense, the two organizations are different, but they both want to serve Lutherans. But something changed in the last couple of years where when one of the ILC member churches in the Philippines had a big disaster, the ILC, at least to my knowledge, for the first time actually said, why don't we see if there's something we can do? And it, part of this conversation, I guess part of where I was hoping to go with this among some of the ILC members of International is, well, how would we actually accomplish that? So for the first time that I know of, the ILC at least made a collective effort to say, why don't we try to raise some funds so that we can assist in a disaster? And so the ILC did this. Now, in the past, perhaps, some ILC member churches might have assisted other ILC member churches individually, but there was no collective effort or no collective drive to say, let's go try and do something. So this is, to my knowledge, the first time. And I think that provides us with a greater potential opportunity so that the ILC could actually begin to do something. And the ILC member churches, they have various resources, and there are very varied sizes. But I guess part of where I would like to go with this is how could the ILC actually maybe develop a disaster network or some other form of a network that could assist one another in times of disaster or for relief, and what might that look like? I know that in the United States, and one of the strengths that came out of some of the disasters like Hurricane Katrina was that the Missouri Synod helped develop among its districts some sort of a disaster network where a person or several people would be identified in the district as disaster coordinators. And so if something were to happen, they then developed a network within their own district of connecting churches and congregations or parts of the district together. And they could all communicate back centrally through this network that they made. I'm wondering if something like that or a different structure could be used for the ILC. What we found in terms of the domestic situation in the United States was this network also then provided a conduit for sending information back and forth for things not related to a disaster, which one of the perennial problems, I think, or challenges, not only for the ILC, but even groups like the LWF, is how do you actually communicate down to the grassroots level of a church body? Quite frankly, that's the most challenging thing even for a national synod is, so to speak, the last mile problem. You can get something to a district office. You might even be able to get some information to a pastor, but how do you actually get some sort of information to a person sitting in the pew? For us, that's one of our greatest challenges. It's probably a challenge for most churches around the world. So how do you do that? So in that sense, what I was actually hoping then is that we could use some of this time to talk about what might happen with the ILC. Some of the ILC members who are here from the executive committee know that we're working on making a strategic plan and talking about what the ILC will be in the next 5 or 10 years. And I guess what I was hoping to accomplish or hoping to begin the discussion is how might we enhance the ILC, or how might we build a network, or how might the ILC and the ILC member churches engage in some sort of disaster network. So I guess with that, I'd hope for some comments or questions or Christian.
Maybe only an information. In the disaster in Chile 2010 was the first time that churches in Latin America, in America, helped another church directly and not through LCMS. You know, Canada helped Chile, but the first church that helped in Chile, earthquake and tsunami, was Paraguay. You know, Uruguay, Argentina, Paraguay, Canada, and of course LCMS helped them. Then, in the case of the Filipina, I know our church helped too, but I like to say only thanks, because we can a channel, you know, because the first problem that we have is how we can send money, for instance, for Filipinas. And the good way is through LCMS or through ILC. And thanks for open doors and open opportunities to our churches to support, to show mercy to another church, the church. And the second is, it's not a problem, the second is only about your question. Our experience in Latin America working in NET was awful. Okay? I don't know if our partners in Latin America remember the theological network. Yeah. We passed a around 10 years, 10 years to try to start some network and never function, never really. Only we spend time to receive each 3 years reports about ideas. And then, I think that it is a necessary network, but my concern, my worry is about how we can put this in action. I don't have an idea.
Well, thank you, Christian. And you're right, one of the challenges is how do ILC members actually transfer funds? And in Western Europe and in North America, because of the situation with 9/11 and the terrorist situation, it's becoming increasingly difficult for Western European and North American churches to send money overseas, or there's increasing restrictions on those monies. So they have to be monies that have no connection to church or proselytization, or they have to be purely connected to humanitarian aid. So that is going to become an increasing problem for our world overall. The LWF doesn't have that problem, and in some cases the LWF is just as happy to hire a Muslim to distribute aid as they would be to hire a Christian. And so the European and the American governments like that. So they don't have that same challenge. But if you want to be a distinctly Lutheran organization, not that we would not aid people who aren't Lutheran or not aid people who aren't Christians, we would, of course. But if you want the focus to be to work among churches, the Western governments are becoming increasingly hostile to that.
Yeah. In Latin America, most of the countries are not allowed to send money out.
Right.
The countries.
Yeah, that's very challenging on any number of levels and any number of projects we're trying to work on. In Ethiopia, there's a similar challenge, too, that their church can't send money outside. And in some countries, there are legal ways around that. We just learned in Ethiopia, if you establish a company that's for profit, even though it's being used by a nonprofit, you can send money out. So in some cases, there are workarounds. In other cases, there's not.
Yeah. In the case of Chile, we can send money, but it's expensive. Because if you send, I don't know, 1,000, you need to pay 200 taxes. But I think that the way that we respond in the case of Philippines, sorry, this is not good. In the case of Filipina, I think that is a way, for instance, for now, through LCMS, through disaster response, LCMS, because LCMS disaster response right now is an international disaster response. It's not a national disaster response. If happen a disaster in Philippines, in Ethiopia, in Chile, I'm sure that LCMS disaster response will be. And then your leadership in that is unquestionable. And that I think that for now, we like sister churches, ILC churches, could be functioned to send money through disaster response, LCMS disaster response, and then disaster response yearly with. We trust because you're a sister church, but even this because we know the guys that are working in the disasters. And his vision, his theology, in the case of Chile, I think that this is the better way. I don't know what it is about other churches, but I think this is the best.
Anyone else? We found in the Philippine disaster response that Canada couldn't even send money to the LCMS.
We've sort of found that as well. We had enough trouble getting money to the Philippines.
John, could you talk?
Sorry.
Or there's a microphone, too, you can go to.
Then can translate.
Sure. We found similar problems. We had trouble sending money to the Philippines. In fact, well, very badly, but I had to contact James and say, we need a letter from you saying that you received this money and that all the money is going to disaster relief to fulfill our governmental requirements. We didn't feel that we could send it to LCMS World Relief because we're not sure the government would have allowed us to do so. And second of all, then it would have been converted U.S. dollars where we would have lost money, and then the U.S. dollars would have been converted again losing money. So, but yeah, certainly the British government is happy to have funds going outside. They're happy with funds coming in.
But that is even one area where maybe the ILC, if they talk about it, particularly among the members and among the regions, they can develop the best strategies that if something were to happen, here's how we might handle it. In some cases, maybe it's saying to LCMS, maybe it's saying directly, maybe it's some other means, depending on where in the world the situation occurred.
Okay, is it working? Are you hearing me?
Is the speaker's mic on?
Anyway, I tried to understand that. I think it's a very good idea to coordinate more this internationally disaster response. So we help us with the Philippines. We sent the money, we have sent the money to Missouri Synod because it was an easy way for us to do. But I can understand also John from England, you have sent directly. But what would be interesting is if you have this kind of stuff happening, a disaster, and you're sent going into that field plan, that maybe you could have a letter from Missouri Synod, from the disaster response office, telling us this is what's going to happen, this is what we are going to do, and if you would help, please, you can send money to this account, so that we have, or to this account, we have already all info
right
we need. In our case last year, we had to write to the Synod and ask for account number, and then it was a long process, but it was a little bit hampering before we got money through. If you get a letter stating what is expected from what you can do, that will be more easier.
Right. And in the case of Canada, for instance, the legal documents, our lawyers thought that it could have been arranged in such a way that Canada could have sent money to the Missouri Synod, but it wasn't able to do it in the time frame of the disaster response. So if we actually organized and developed, we could perhaps take care of some of these legal arrangements ahead of time so to make it, to facilitate it or make it more easy to do in the future.
We, at the Lutheran Hour, we receive money from Canada for a specific project in Nicaragua. So they send to us, but it's really very specific. It needs very specifically be stated for what, and there is a need of documentation on what we really will use that money in Nicaragua. So it's really very, the government in Canada is very on the church and organizations mm-hmm. that are sending money now.
Yeah. Anyone else? I sort of want to put either Bishop David or Ekong kind of on the spot to say something about the LWF and some observations.
Actually, LWF does not work very strongly in Madagascar. He encouraged us to join a big organization called
Italians opened up their task force with an organization that's now for disasters in Madagascar.
And what does the LWO focus on in Madagascar? What's its primary focus?
They are working hard to push us to have women pastor by many conferences, at least the beginning of September this year. They spent a lot of money for 200 fellow Janus LEDs in Madagascar. But at the end of the conference, they told us, the ladies, clearly we won't force you to accept if the LWF is working hard for what happened.
Can you repeat that in the microphone?
If I caught all of it, Bishop David was saying that the LWF does not do much in terms of disaster relief in Madagascar. It does work with a variety of other organizations, probably on relief or development sorts of projects, but they're not Lutheran organizations. And then right now, the LWF is primarily focusing on trying to convince the church body to ordain women as pastors. And so they're spending a lot of money on conferences and sending people there to teach that it's good to have women pastors. Is that accurate?
And the second what they do there is just to teach about human rights and civil rights like that. Many kind of conferences that we have.
So you said the second thing LWF does is focus on civil rights, social justice, and human rights issues in Madagascar. Bishop?
Yeah, I would like to add that they do a lot in places like Sudan, like Mali for now. They're also there in a few other African countries where we are having all of these conflicts. And they are walking through their desk for World Service. That's what they call desk for World Service. They send relief. Like I had to be in Congo Brazzaville to really assess the disaster that struck that city where one of their ammunition was exploded. Mm-hmm. So it affected two grand churches. So I was sent to go and save sites. Great. That was about 2 years ago. And actually recommended that these churches need to be repurposed. Which members are relocated in terms of accommodation. And I visited where the Catholics actually accommodated those who were displaced. It was quite a huge, large group. There was no good water supply. There's not enough food. So we also requested that a lot of them should send the material. And above all, send a medical team, particularly for malaria and typhoid. So they could be able to do something. So some level of response. And I know that presently in Liberia, they would work through the Department for All Service to see also how they can help with this Ebola stuff. Mm-hmm. I have personally written to them because it's a happy department for All Service in Liberia. to see how they can make with that. Some assistance to upgrade the
And so if you didn't hear Archbishop Ekong, he mentioned that in parts of Africa, such as Sudan and Congo and other places where there's been disasters, and now in Liberia where the Ebola is at, that people, that the LWF does work through its World Service Desk and partners with other non-governmental agencies so that relief is given to people, and Archbishop Ekong himself, being an LWF member church and on one of the committees, has participated in the assessment of some of the relief and made recommendations in some cases that there should be relief given.
Yeah, to add to that, the ACT Alliance is an arm of the LWF, and it is expected that you contribute some amount of money as registration contribution yearly, annually, to ACT Alliance to enable you to draw support if you are affected by disaster. And so for some churches who wouldn't pay the annual dues, they would not get any relief.
Oh.
That happens from the LWF through ACT Alliance.
So the ACT Alliance is based in Geneva, and it's a partnership of various churches, actually, that assist in disaster response and other situations. And Archbishop was saying that you need to pay them, you have to contribute something each year, a membership due or something, and if a disaster were to hit you and you didn't pay your membership due, you wouldn't receive any help. It reminds me of when we first moved to Tennessee, our neighborhood, in order to get the fire truck to come to your house if it burned down, you had to pay the fire department an annual fee of like $100 a year. And if you didn't pay, the fire truck would come and watch your house burn down, but they wouldn't put the fire out. They would just make sure that it didn't spread to another house. So I guess this is sort of like fire insurance for the LWF. If you don't pay, you don't get help. But all of this raises another question. The ILC and the ILC member are much smaller. The ILC and ILC member churches generally do not get governmental aid, so the U.S. government isn't giving Missouri Synod money. I'm sure that the Nigerian government is not giving the Lutheran Church of Nigeria money, but the Church of Sweden and other churches are receiving government money for the LWF. And on that level, the ILC could never mount a disaster response on the level of some of these other organizations, and it probably should not be a goal of the ILC to do that. So that would also be a question of, if the ILC were to respond, what is the right kind of response for the ILC? The ILC is not going to be the American Red Cross or the International Red Cross going in right after a disaster to provide major relief on a large scale. So what is the appropriate kind of response from ILC and ILC churches, and how can they supplement or do something uniquely different from these other non-governmental agencies? That's, I think, an important question if the ILC is to engage in this sort of work. The Missouri Synod has the same problem. Even though Missouri Synod is a larger church body, in comparison to the U.S. federal government and other nonprofits that do disaster response, it's just a small drop in the bucket. So how can the Missouri Synod make a meaningful contribution to disasters? How can the ILC make a meaningful contribution to partner churches? And I guess part of what I would think is that whatever the ILC does is it would focus on assisting our actual member churches. Most of the non-governmental agencies are not going to they may help people with food, or they may help church members get out of a dangerous situation, but they're not going to help a church body rebuild churches or congregations, or they're not going to help do a mission plant. Or so it seems to me that the ILC should focus more along the things that we can uniquely do rather than something that is being done generically by a number of organizations. Any other thoughts or comments on that? Yeah.
Yeah. Believe in this. I will try to say in English. Alejandro is saying that the biggest or one of the most important help in the Chile case in 2010 was that Argentina sent pastors with his own resources to serve in Chile for short terms to respond at the disaster. Sometimes it's not only money, but in cases like churches like us, small church, a disaster that affect 2 million people directly, it's impossible to respond, even you sent to us $1 million. And was very important, the help from Argentina in that case. Was the first time in Latin America when a church sent not only pastor but lays with the pastor to another sister church. The first case was in Paraguay, when a big fire killed...
How many people were killed?
Paraguay?
What person?
In Paraguay.
400
people died in a small mall.
Oh.
In a fire. And Argentina also sent some pastors to help with the people. It's another way.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe churches around neighborhood.
President James, do you want to comment maybe what was important about churches responding when you had so many people from around the world doing all sorts of other relief work in the Philippines?
Well, first is, I think in the earlier part of the discussion, there is a problem as to how send assistance. If I remember it right, we were in Wittenberg, I think, when the ILC Executive Committee talked about the plan that, because the storm in the Philippines is a new experience to the ILC member churches, we agreed that I think money would be sent through the LCMS, and the LCMS is generous enough to match every dollar that will be given to the LCMS. Nevertheless, there were churches that directly sent their help to a member of ILC churches that directly sent their help to the LCP. Also, there are a number of OWF partner churches that helped the LCP, and particularly the Church of Bavaria, who is helping us on the reconstruction of the churches.
One of the questions was, when you had so many, the points you raised are very good and things that we need to develop further, but the question to you was, when there were so many international organizations that came to the Philippines, that International Red Cross and other entities, what was important about knowing that the Missouri Synod and the ILC was responding in some way to your church?
Well, there are so many organizations that came to the Philippines and worked during the disaster time, but I think one of the pastors can attest that it was difficult even for the church, particularly to be assisted. An example for this is, I think we experienced in one of the storms, Alliance, which is connected with the LWF, they sent me an email saying that something like 4,000 euros was designated for the Philippines because of the storm, the members especially, and I communicated how can this be given to the LCP. I gave them the account number, but after that I received no communication. So my point is, despite of the overwhelming support that are coming or agencies that are working in the Philippines in times of disaster, unfortunately it's very difficult for LCP, which is not a big church, and the LCP in the Philippines to be given or assisted. If ever you are given, maybe you are the last priority. So to me it's a big help that we have the ILC member churches who really were generous enough to extend the assistance. So as I said, I think the executive committee of the ILC should look into more how we can really improve the system in which we can assist churches who are members in times of calamities.
Yeah, thank you. And in the case, you had mentioned that some ILC churches sent funds directly to your church and not to the Missouri Synod. And we already previously discussed how there were governmental and legal complications in some cases. The Missouri Synod still matched the gift given directly to you if the ILC church informed us. So even though they didn't send it to us, we still matched the gift despite that challenge. Are there more thoughts or ideas on how ILC can engage in disaster response or other ways? I think some of this is important for the executive committee to hear as we go into January and talk about how we're going to plan for the next 5 or 10 years.
You name all things. Communications, good communications, a clear channel to send the money, and maybe we can add that we see reports how the money was used.
Yeah.
And thanks for encouraging us to send to the ILC committee. Was a really good opportunity. Maybe churches was thinking how we can, and then we received your invitation letter to support this, to offer.
Oh, thank you.
To grow.
And I think you mentioned as well, perhaps to be added on to that is, pastors, laity from that area, how can they come to help us or other sister churches? And I think that's key. So thank you for that.
David, were you going to say something? No. Okay. Well, that is primarily what I wanted to talk about. And I'm done a little early. I'm happy to talk about anything else you want to, or ask and answer any questions if I can, or even shift topics if you want. But my primary goal, since all of you were here, was to talk just briefly about the origins of the two organizations and then to talk about how we can actually engage in more active discussion with one another on disaster response and other areas.
Maybe just something to ask. Part of choice in Germany.
Norberto is asking, sorry.
Yeah.
Only a technical question. President Norberto is asking me if it's possible to send money to LCMS through credit card.
Yes, we were working on how to do that. And that is a possibility. We now have a designated way to receive money for the ILC through the Missouri Synod. And so it is possible to do that.
Because if we will send, I don't know, 2,000, I can find in Chile two persons with 1,000 in his credit card that can make it. And I will reimburse the member.
Right.
Thank you, Norbert.
Just to remember that our partners in Germany sell it. They just celebrated 60 years this week or this month from their diaspora, Diakonie and Katastrophenhilfe, so helping catastrophes. So they have also an organization in their church that are in danger. But it's maybe interesting to see how much and how far they can also be involved in this.
Right, and I think Zelk had an overwhelming response. I think they raised something like 50,000 euros or something for the disaster response, which...
There's 60 years already in this.
Yes.
Expertise as well.
Anyone else want to say anything or comment or... Well, if there's nothing else, I thank you for your time, and I guess you have about 20 minutes or so before chapel. So thank you.